My mouth goes dry, and my witty comeback reflex flatlines.
Pay no attention to this sorry mess, the redhead says. He's been smashed for 3 days straight.
The sorry mess raises a silver flask.
And on my way to 4.
I've seen my share of sloppy drunk frat boys in the thrall of an after-party late-night food binge. This guy hides it well. The redhead closes his menu.
I'll have tea and the cherry pie. And peach. And hell, give me a blueberry a la mode as well.
His friend snorts, but he's unapologetic.
I like pie.
I turn to the other one.
Apple,
he says softly, managing to make the benign two-syllable word sound totally sexy. My pelvis swoons like a romance novel heroine who just saw her Brad Pitt circa Legends of the Fall-like hero riding toward her on horseback. Either he's got a lust talisman for a voice box, or I'm in serious need of a hookup. Oh, who am I kidding? Of course I need a hookup. I punched my V-card when I was 17, with my high school boyfriend. Since Jack, there's been no one. It's distinctly possible my hymen has grown back. I'm not into one-night stands, and who has the time for a relationship? Not this girl. The redhead's phone rings, and when he answers the call on speaker, the conversation follows me into the kitchen while I get their order. Hello, darling. It feels like I've been waiting ages, and I was frightened I'd be asleep when you finally called, so I called you instead. The woman on the phone also has an accent. She speaks very fast and sounds very awake.
How many energy drinks have you had, Franny?
3, and I feel amazing. I'm going to have a bubble bath soon, and I know how you love me in bubbles, so now we can FaceTime while I do.
Please don't,
that sensual voice says sarcastically. Is that Nicholas, Simon?
Yes, he's here with me. We're grabbing a bite.
Pooh, I thought you were alone. The bubbles will have to wait, then. Oh, and I've made you 2 new shirts. They turned out marvelous. I can't wait for you to see them. There's a shrug in Simon's voice when he explains to his friend,
She's taken up sewing for a hobby. She likes to make me clothes.
And he replies,
Can she make herself a gag?
Which Franny, apparently, overhears. Piss off, Nicky! After Simon gets off the phone, with a promise to bubble bath together back at the hotel room, the two men continue to talk in a hum of lowered voices. I catch the tail end of the conversation when I back out of the kitchen door, teacup in hand and pie plates on my arms.
Learn the hard way. Everything is for sale, and everyone has a price. My, but you're a delightful ball of sunshine when you're pissed. It's a shame you don't drink more often.
The sarcasm game is strong with Simon. I feel those gray-green eyes watching me as I place the plates on the table. It's possible he's hotter now that I know his name. Nicholas. It's a nice name.
What do you think, Dove?
He asks me. I slide his slice of pie in front of him, and Simon digs into his blueberry.
What do I think about what? We were just having a debate. I happen to think that everything and everyone can be bought for the right price. What do you think?
There was a time when I was younger, stupider, and so much more innocent about life, like Ellie, when I would have said no way. But out in the real world, idealism is the first thing to go. I agree with you. Money talks, bullshit walks.
Bloody hell, now you're both depressing me. Simon says.
I may need another slice of pie. Nicholas smiles slowly, gorgeously. It makes my head feel light and my knees feel weak. And he has dimples. How did I not notice them before? They're the perfect foil to his fuck-hotness, adding a playful, boyish handsomeness to his already devastating impact.
I'm glad you said that, sweets.
And I'm a nanosecond away from giggling like a fool, so I start to beat it out of there. Until that voice, that I'd enjoy here reading the phone book, if anyone still used a phone book, stops me.
$10,000.
I turn around, head tilting. He clarifies.
Spend the night with me and I'll pay you $10,000.
To do what? I laugh, because he's joking, right?
The bed is empty and large. Let's start there and see what happens.
I glance from him to Simon, to the two guys by the door.
Is this a joke?
He takes another swig from his flask.
I never joke about money or sex.
You want to pay me $10,000 to have sex with you?
More than once and in a dozen different positions. I could,
he makes air quotes,
woo you, but that takes time.
He taps his watch. A Rolex, diamonds and platinum, easily $130,000.
And I'm pathetically short on time these days.
I snort, getting over the shock. I'm not sleeping with you for money.
Why not?
Because I'm not a prostitute.
Of course you're not. But you're young and beautiful. I'm handsome and rich. The more applicable question is why aren't we fucking already?
That is a strong argument. Wait, no, no, it's not. It's a bad argument. A bad, dirty, wild crap. Nicholas seems to enjoy watching me think it over. And God, do I think about it. I'll be thinking about it on repeat down to the smallest and most well-hung detail after they're gone. But fantasies aside, I'm just not the kind of girl to go for something like this in real life.
No. No?
He looks genuinely shocked and disappointed.
No,
I repeat. It would be wrong. He rubs his finger along his bottom lip, sizing me up. Speaking of sizing, he has great fingers. Long, with just the right amount of girth, and with clean, trimmed nails. And freakily, Dr. Seuss pops into my head. Oh, the places those fingers will go. There's something very wrong with me.
Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
Lesbian?
No.
Then it's the rightest thing you'll ever do.
My chin rises and my arms cross. My dignity isn't for sale. Nicholas leans forward, eating me up with his eyes.
I don't want to put my cock anywhere near your dignity, love. I want to put it everywhere else.
Do you have an answer for everything?
Here's an answer. $20,000.
Holy shit. My jaw creaks open, and if there were flies, I'd catch them all. Those gorgeous eyes look deep into mine, pulling me right in.
You won't regret it, I swear.
And now thoughts of the money, all that cash, eclipse thoughts of all the sex. The things I could do with that much money. Replace the water heater, make a dent in the mortgage payments, put some toward Ellie's second semester tuition. Jesus, it's tempting. But after the money was gone, and it'd be gone fast, my reflection in the mirror would still be there. I'd have to look at it every day. I guess we were both wrong, I shrug. Some things aren't for sale, for any price. Simon claps.
Good for you, sweetheart. Optimism wins the day. This pie is fantastic, by the way. You make these yourself, you said. You should write a cookbook.
I don't answer him. Nicholas still holds my gaze. I can't look away.
Or maybe I'm just trying to buy the wrong thing. Sometimes the cow's not for sale, but the milk doesn't always have to be free.
Okay, now his drunk is showing, because that made no frigging sense. You want to explain what that means? He laughs.
What about a kiss?
The breath leaves my lungs in one big swoosh.
And what he says next makes it a struggle to replace it. If I don't get to taste it soon, I'll go mad.
I've never thought much about my lips. They're nice, I guess. Naturally plump and pink. And I use lip balm, raspberry-flavored, sometimes shea butter, a couple of times a day.
$5,000.
I would have kissed him for free. But there's something exciting, flattering, almost, in a sick, twisted way, about him making the offer. Because he wants this bad enough to pay for it.
$5,000? For a kiss? That's what I said.
With tongue?
It's not really a kiss without it.
I hesitate just a moment longer, long enough for Nicholas to ruin everything.
Just say yes, pet. You obviously need the money.
I gasp before I can stop myself. I didn't think 5 words from a stranger could hurt so much. What a dick. It's 1,000 different things. The humiliation of having my circumstances thrown in my face. The disappointment that this man, this gorgeous, seductive man, thinks I'm some kind of charity case. The shame that comes along with struggling. In a flash, I get a bird's-eye view of the coffee shop. The chipping paint, the broken lock, the worn chairs and shabby curtains that stopped being chic years ago.
For fuck's sake, Nicholas, Simon says.
But he just looks at me, waiting, those arrogant green eyes alight with anticipation. So I give him what he's waiting for.
Hands under the table, I order.
He smiles wider, puts his flask in his pocket, and does what he's told.
Close your eyes. I like a woman who's not afraid to take charge.
No more talking. He's said more than enough. I lean in, keeping my eyes open the whole time, memorizing every angle of that face, feeling his warm breath against my cheek. This close, I can see the shadow of stubble on his chin, and for just a second, I let myself wonder what it would feel like scratching against my stomach, my thighs, everywhere. Then in one move, I pick up his plate and smash the apple pie in his stupid, handsome face.
Kiss this, asshole!
I straighten up and slap the check down.
Here's your bill. Leave the money on the table. There's the door. Use it before I come back with my baseball bat and show you why they used to call me Babe Ruthette.
I don't look back as I stalk toward the kitchen, but I hear a mumble.
Good pie.
And as if I didn't know already, I'm sure of it now. Men suck.
Chapter 4 Nicholas. There's a wall in Anthorpe Castle that displays weapons of war used by the royal family through the centuries. Swords, sabers, daggers. Some still have blood on the blades. One of those weapons is a flail, commonly known as a ball and chain. A 2-foot baton attached with a chain to a heavy, spiked ball. It's an unwieldy mace that was actually rarely used in battle because of the danger to the wielder and the long recovery time before one could strike again. However, when it was used, the damage it inflicted was deadly. The spikes pierced armor and embedded themselves in chests and skulls. That flail is the first thing I think of when I pry open my eyes, because I feel like one has been planted in my brain. The bright sliver of white light seeping through the shades in the otherwise dark room makes agony explode behind my eyes. I moan, and a moment later the door opens, Simon's shadowed silhouette spilling in from the hall.
You're alive, then? For a time I wasn't sure. Thanks for your concern, I grate out. Too loudly. Even the hushed words bounce around my skull like shrapnel. I try again, even softer this time. What the hell did you let me drink last night? Simon laughs without sympathy. Let you? You guzzled what you've been drinking since the goat. Vodka. Straight up. Barbarian.
Never again. I swear to my liver that if he just pulls through for me this one last time, I'll be kinder, smarter from now on. With sickening realization, I remember the black tie fundraiser we attended last night to support a royal charity.
Did I make an idiot of myself at the gala? No, you were very restrained, quiet and aloof. I was the only one who could tell that you were lucky to still be standing.
Good. At least I don't have to worry about that. I rubbed my temples.
I had the oddest dream last night. Was it flying pink elephants and Fergus in a ballerina tutu? That one always disturbs me.
I laugh. Not the smartest thing, as pain reverberates through my bones.
No, I tell him quietly. I dreamed about my mother. Oh, she was scolding me, all sorts of riled up, She even yanked on the short hairs at the back of my neck. Remember how she used to do that when we'd misbehave in public? I remember.
Simon's voice is laced with nostalgia.
Until Henry ruined it for her in front of the press when he yelled, "Ow! What'd you pull my hair for, Mum?"
I chuckled again, despite the discomfort.
What was she railing at you for? Did you know?
She said I made the angel cry. I moved my arm over my face to block out the light.
Well, she did look like an angel, and her pie was heavenly. I didn't see any tears, but you definitely hurt her feelings.
I dragged my arm away and struggled to sit up.
What are you going on about?
The waitress, Simon explains.
At the coffee shop we stopped in after you dragged me through the city, because you could walk around without being mobbed by cameras and fangirls. Don't you recall?
Images flicker through my head. I stop on one. The sound of a wounded gasp, and navy blue eyes, the color of the sky at dusk, biting back tears.
That was real. Yes, you bloody ass, it was real. You offered her 20,000 for some rumpy pumpy. She turned you down, smart girl.
I run my palm along my jaw, feeling dry crumbs and leftover granules of sugar. The sweet taste of apples lingers on my tongue, and it all comes rushing back, every word.
Fucking Christ! Is the story online yet?
I can see the headline now. Pimping Prince Hits New York.
No, not a word.
Simon checks his watch.
It's 2:30 in the afternoon, so you're probably safe. If the little bird was going to sing, I think it would have leaked by now.
That's a relief, I guess. But still, whether it's because of the dream or my own behavior, regret rises around me like steam. It seeps inside with every breath, clinging to my lungs.
It's still coming down outside. Hell of a storm. You may as well finish sleeping it off. We won't be traveling today.
Good idea, I murmur, already drifting off, with visions of delicious ripe lips and swirling dark hair dancing in my head. Early the next morning, I'm feeling almost human again, though still achy and fog-headed. I have a meeting upstate with the heads of a military charity organization, and we're scheduled to leave just before sunrise. The earlier we arrive at our destination, the less likely a crowd will be there to greet us. Thankfully, the damnable snow has finally stopped, and if there's one thing I appreciate about this city, it's its ability to get up and running through any catastrophe. Although the roads appear passable, Logan trades out the limousine for an SUV. In the back seat, I straighten my tie and adjust my cufflinks, while Simon mentions a craving for breakfast tea and a slice, or two, of pie to go with it. I've been looking for a reason to return, not that I need an excuse, because I haven't been able to stop thinking about the pretty waitress, and the way I treated her. After I nod, Simon gives Logan the directions, and we pull up in front of Amelia's a few minutes later. The street lamps are still on, and the sidewalk is empty. But the door is unlocked, so we walk inside, an annoying bell chiming above our heads. It's quiet. I don't take a seat, but stand in the middle of the room amongst the tables.
"We're closed," she says, coming through the swinging door,
and then her head jerks up as she comes to a halt.
"Oh, it's you."
She's even lovelier than I remembered. Than I dreamed. Delicate midnight tendrils frame a face that belongs in a museum, with stunning dark sapphire eyes that should be commemorated in vibrant oils and soft watercolors. If Helen launched 1,000 ships, this girl could raise 1,000 hard-ons. She's prettily made, the top of her head coming only to my chin, but fantastically curvy. Great full tits that strain the buttons of a wrinkled white blouse, shapely hips in a black skirt tapering to a tiny waist I could wrap my hands around, and toned legs, encased in sheer black tights, finish off the whole package very nicely. An unfamiliar anxiousness fizzes like soda in my gut. "The door was open," I explain. "It's broken." Logan flicks at the lock. Security is his life, so a broken lock would annoy him like a puzzle with the final piece missing. "What do you want?" She has no idea who I am. It's in the defensive way she holds herself, and the accusatory note in her voice. Some women try to pretend they don't recognize me, but I can always tell. Her ignorance is rather thrilling. There are no expectations, no hidden agendas, no reasons to pretend. What she sees is what she gets, and all she sees is me. My throat is suddenly a barren wasteland. I swallow, but it's difficult. "Well, he's desperate for some pie," I say, hooking my thumb at Simon. "And I wanted to apologize for the other evening. I don't normally act that way. I was on a bit of a bender. In my experience, people don't do things when they're drunk that they wouldn't do normally." "No, you're right. I would have thought all those things, but I never would have said them out loud." I move closer, slowly. "And if I'd been sober, my opening bid would have been much higher." She crosses her arms.
"Are you trying to be cute?"
"No, I don't have to try. It just sort of happens." Her brow furrows just slightly, like she can't decide if she should be angry or amused. I feel myself smiling. "What's your name? I don't know if I asked before."
"You didn't, and it's Liv."
"That's an odd name. Were you ill as a baby? I mean, is Liv what your parents were hoping you'd do, or did they just not like you?" Her lips fold like she's fighting a grin. Amused is in the lead.
"Liv. Livy. Short for Olivia. Olivia Hammond."
"Ah." I nod slowly. "That's a beautiful name. Much more fitting. I can't take my eyes off her. Don't want to in the slightest. Well, Olivia, I regret my behavior when we first met, and I hope you'll accept my apology." There's the tiniest flinch of her features, a split second, but I see it. Then she moves to a table and fidgets with a clear-wrapped pie.
"Whatever. I'm over it. It's not like you said anything that wasn't true. It is pretty obvious that I do need the money."
The self-deprecation in her voice, and knowing it's there because of me, makes my voice sharp. "Olivia?" She looks up, into my face, and my tone gentles. "I'm sorry, truly." That dark blue gaze holds onto mine for a few seconds before she says softly,
"Okay."
"Okay," I return, just as soft. Then she blinks and hands the pie to Simon.
"You can have this. It's 2 days old, so I won't sell it. It might be a little dry, but it's on the house."
He smiles like a wolf that's just been handed a wounded sheep.
"You really are an angel, lass."
"Can he take a fork with him?" I ask, so I don't have to listen to his stomach grumble the entire way. Smirking, she hands over a fork, and I go for the gold. "Would you like to have coffee sometime, Olivia? With me?" It's been years since I've asked a woman out on a real date. It's strange, exhilarating, and nerve-wracking at the same time.
"I don't like coffee. Never touch the stuff."
My eyes roll over the room. "You work in a coffee house?"
"Exactly."
I nod. "Hmm, I see your point. It'll have to be dinner, then. Are you available this evening? I could pick you up on our way back." She gives a jumpy laugh.
"I thought you didn't have time for it."
She makes air quotes with her fingers.
"Wooing.
Some things are worth making time for." That catches her off guard, making her words stumble.
"Well, I don't date."
"Good God. Why not?"
I ask, horrified. That's a bloody sin.
A sin?
You're stunning. Obviously clever. You should date often, and preferably with a man who knows how it's done. I rest my palm on my chest. Coincidentally, I happen to be fantastic at it. What are the odds? She laughs again, quick and light, and it feels like when I pull myself up the last peak of a rock formation. Satisfying, more than a bit victorious. Before she can answer, a furry headache on four legs appears beside her, making a yapping, snarling sound.
Ellie!
She yells over her shoulder.
Bosco can't be down here!
What is that? I ask.
It's my dog.
No. No, I have dogs. Dogs are descended from wolves. That's descended from a rat. I look again. An ugly rat. She lifts the little monster into her arms.
Don't insult my dog.
Not trying to. Just telling the truth. For once. And it feels fucking grand. But the barking has to go. I make contact with its beady little eyes and snap my fingers, ordering, shh. And blessed silence fills the air. Olivia looks from me to the animal.
How did you do that?
Dogs are pack animals. They defer to the leader. This one is smart enough to recognize that that's me. I step closer to her, detecting a clean, lovely scent, like fresh honey. Let's see if it works with you. I snap my fingers. Dinner. She cocks her hip, annoyed and yet entertained against her will.
I'm not a dog.
My eyes, filthy, deviant things that they are, slide over every beautiful inch of her. No, you definitely aren't. Her cheeks go pink, making her eyes appear almost violet. It's lovely. But then another ball comes bouncing into the room. A small blonde one, wrapped in a fuzzy teal robe with SpongeBob SquarePants slippers on its feet.
Ah, yeah! School's closed again!
She does the whip.
Ooh, ooh!
Until she sees us. Then she freezes. And she definitely knows who I am.
Hi! Wow!
She points to Logan and says in a thin, mortified voice,
I like your tie.
He glances down at the tie in question, then nods his thanks. And she seems to want to dissolve into the floor, but she takes the dog from Olivia instead and confesses in a hushed voice,
I'm gonna go hang myself in my closet now.
After she's gone, I ask, is she joking?
She's 17. It depends on the day.
Then she wipes her small hands down the front of her skirt.
Well, this has been fun. Thanks for stopping by.
She waves to Simon.
Enjoy the pie.
He already is. He smiles, mouth full of peach crumble.
See you around, I guess,
she says to me. I step forward and take her warm hand in mine, before brushing a kiss across her knuckles. Count on it, love.
Chapter 5. Olivia. Count on it, love. Wow. What the hell just happened? Walking up to the apartment, I feel like a James Bond martini, shaken, but also stirred. Most of the guys I've known, Jack included, were laid back and easygoing, passive. What do you want to do tonight? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. But Nicholas is different. Decisive. A man. A man who's used to being listened to. Seeing him sober, I can tell the difference. It was in the way he carried himself. Wide shoulders back, long spine straight, his presence almost like gravity, pulling at everything in his orbit, making us all want to let him take us where he will. Jeez. Even Bosco listened to him, which definitely makes the little beast a traitor, but I get it. It was fucking hot. I can still feel the press of his lips on the back of my hand. Who does that? Kisses a woman's hand. No one I've ever met, that's for damn sure. The spot he kissed feels warm and tingly, branded, but not in a skin-sizzling, gross, torturing way that happens on cable television shows. The good kind of branded. Marked. Do you know who that was? Ellie shrieks, practically tackling me in the living room. Shh, Dad's sleeping, she asks again, this time in a whisper yell. A rich asshole with a friend who really likes pie? Her big blue eyes roll to the sky. How are we even related? She drags me into her bedroom and smacks me in the face with a 6-month-old issue of People magazine. That was Prince Nicholas! And there he is, on the cover. Perfect mouth grinning, perfect arms folded across that broad chest, wearing a dark blue cashmere sweater over a white collared shirt, looking like an Oxford University wet dream. Get out! I deny it, even while ripping the magazine out of her hands. That explains the accent I couldn't place. Not British or Scottish, but Wesconian. And his attitude. He's not a leader of the pack. He's heir to the freaking throne. There are a dozen more pictures inside. A baby photo. His first day of school wearing a lacy collared shirt. A close-up of him as a teenager glaring at the camera, looking broody as hell. And more recent ones. One with his arm draped around a stunning tall blonde in a red dress at a dinner party. Another with him sitting in a high-backed wooden chair during a session of Parliament. And, holy shit, this one's got to be a paparazzi shot. It's got a grainy, zoomed-in look to it, but it's definitely him, walking out of the turquoise ocean off the Maldives Islands, skin glistening, dark hair slicked back, naked. The full Mahdi parts are blacked out, but a dark, happy trail and the defined V of his pelvis are so very visible. My tongue tingles with the raw desire to trace that groove. Fuck. I want to lick the picture. A sidebar provides quick facts about his country and ancestry. He's a direct descendant of John William Pembroke, a northern British general who joined forces with the southern Scots in the wars for Scottish independence. He married the daughter of Robert the Bruce, king of the Scots. After Scotland's defeat, Pembroke's coalition broke off from both mother countries and, after years of battles, formed their own independent nation, Wesco. Blood rushes to my cheeks and my head feels hot. He must think I'm an idiot. Did he know that I didn't know? Who am I kidding? Of course he knew. I threw a pie in his face. Jesus. Ellie grabs her glitter-cased phone off the bed. I am so putting this on Snapchat. My reaction is immediate and visceral. No. I cover her hands with mine. Don't. Everyone will come here looking for him. It'll be a madhouse. Exactly! She jumps up and down. Business will be crazy! Ooh, we should name a pie after him. The McHottie, the king of pies. I know that would be the smart thing to do. The part of me that doesn't actually want to get kicked out on the street yells, sell, sell, sell. But it feels wrong. I'm not entirely sure Nicholas isn't the dickhead he acted like the other night. I don't owe him a thing. And yet, selling him out, using him to bring in business, telling the world where he might show up next, feels like a betrayal. He won't come back if you post that, Ellie. Did he say he was going to? That he's coming back? This possibility seems to excite her more than a million social media likes. I think he will. And electricity races up my spine because I want him to. Ellie and I use the rare day off as a do-it-ourselves spa day. We soak our feet, loofah our heels, and paint each other's nails. We glob Vaseline on our hands and put them in thick cotton socks to moisturize. We rub a mixture of olive oil and raw eggs through our hair, then wrap our heads in plastic wrap. A very attractive look. If only Instagram could see us now. We put cucumber slices on our eyes and oatmeal masks on our faces. All with a VH1 The Big 80s, The Big Movies marathon playing in the background. Ghostbusters, St. Elmo's Fire, Dirty Dancing. We finish the beautification ritual by tweezing each other's eyebrows, the ultimate trust exercise. At about 4 o'clock, our dad comes out of his room. His eyes are tired and bloodshot, but he's in a good mood. We play a few rounds of hearts, a game he taught us when we were kids. Then he makes Ellie and me tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches. It's the best dinner I've had in a long time, probably because someone else made it for me. After the sun goes down and I can see my reflection in the window, Ellie slips on her boots, throws her coat over her pajamas, and walks to a friend's house down the block. Our dad follows soon after, heading to the bar to watch the game with the guys. And in my bed, alone, with a sandalwood and coconut candle burning on the nightstand, feeling soft and smooth and pretty, I engage in the activity I've been fantasizing about all day long. I Google Nicholas Pembroke. I have no clue if any of the information is true, but there's a ton of it. Everything from his favorite color, black, to what brand of underwear he prefers, Calvin's. Of course, he has his own Wikipedia page. He has an official website and about 10,000 fan sites. His ass has its own Twitter handle, @HisRoyalArse, and it has more followers than John Hamm's penis and Chris Evans' beard put together. The gossip sites claim he's screwed practically every woman he's spoken to, from Taylor Swift, she wrote a whole album about him, to Betty White, best night of her life. Nicholas and his brother, Henry, are close, sharing passions for polo and philanthropy. He simultaneously adores his grandmother, the Queen, a gentle-looking woman, cute in that little old person kind of way, and is counting the days until she drops dead. After a few hours, I feel like a stalker, and I'm convinced most of these writers are just making shit up. Before I log off, a video thumbnail at the top of the search list catches my attention, a news clip from the funeral of Prince Thomas and Princess Callista. I click on it and am brought to a close-up of two coffins, both white and trimmed in gold, being pulled in a horse-drawn carriage. Throngs of crying spectators line the streets like a black curtain. The camera pans out, showing four people walking behind the carriage. The Queen and her husband, Prince Edward, are in the center. A young boy with light, curling hair, Prince Henry, walks on the outside, and Nicholas, wearing the same coal-colored suit as his brother, is on the other side. At 14, Nicholas was already his full height. His cheekbones are less defined, his chin smoother, shoulders narrower, but he's still a handsome boy. The newscaster's voiceover explains that it's Wesco tradition for the sovereign and heirs to walk behind the coffin of a royal family member as it's paraded through every street in the city, before arriving at the cathedral for the final service. Miles. They had to walk miles before they could bury their parents. Suddenly, Henry, he was 10 then, stops walking, his knees almost buckling. He covers his face with both hands and sobs. And I taste tears in the back of my throat, because he reminds me of Ellie, the day we buried our mother. How hard she cried, inconsolable, and that same devastation plays out on my computer screen. For several excruciating seconds, it's as if all the people are frozen. No one moves, no one tries to comfort him. Water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. He might as well be standing in the middle of the street alone. And then in three quick strides, Nicholas is there, pulling his little brother against him, wrapping his arms around his small body like a shield. Henry's head only comes to the top of Nicholas's stomach. He buries his face, and Nicholas gently strokes his hair. Then he glares up at the crowd and the cameras, a hooded gaze burning with resentment and grief. After a few moments, Nicholas motions to a footman, and the broadcaster filming the event must have hired a frigging lip reader because there are subtitles. Have the car brought forward. The man seems unsure and starts to turn toward the Queen, but the crack of Nicholas's words stops him in his tracks.
Don't look at her. I am your prince. You will do what I say, and you will do it now.
And in that second, Nicholas doesn't look like a 14-year-old boy. He doesn't look like a boy at all. He looks like a king. The man swallows and bows, and a few minutes later a black Rolls-Royce creeps slowly up through the sea of people. Nicholas guides his brother into the back seat. Then, with the door still open, He crouches down and wipes Henry's face with a handkerchief from his pocket. "Mum will be so disappointed in me," Henry says, with a heartbreaking hiccup. Nicholas shakes his head.
"No, Henry, never."
He brushes Henry's wavy blonde hair back.
"I'll walk for both of us. I'll meet you at the cathedral, and we'll go in together."
He cups his small jaw in his hand and tries to smile.
"We're going to be all right, you and I, yeah?"
Henry sniffles and works hard to give his brother a nod. When Nicholas takes his place beside the Queen, the procession continues. As I close my laptop, my heart feels so heavy inside my chest, so sad for them. Henry was just a little boy, and Nicholas, in spite of the money and the power and the gold-plated everything, Nicholas Pembroke hadn't been so different that day. Not so different from me. Just a kid, trying his hardest to keep the family he had left from falling apart. The next day, the sun is shining, but the air is still frigid, ensuring the snow piles outside won't be melting anytime soon. After the morning rush, I'm behind the register, cracking open a new roll of quarters, when a low, lyrical voice places an order.
"Large coffee, please. Milk, no sugar."
My eyes lift, meeting a gray-green gaze, and a spiky thrill zings over my skin, immediate and irrepressible. "You came back?"
"Unlike some strange, but very pretty, people, I happen to like coffee."
He's wearing jeans, relaxed and worn, with a casual black button-down, and a baseball hat pulled low over his forehead. For some reason, the hat, seeing him in it, is funny. So normal, I guess, and a laugh weaves through my words. "Nice hat." He raises a fist.
"Go, Yanks!"
"Do you really think it'll work as a disguise?" He's surprised by the question. He glances around the room. Only two other customers sit at the tables, and neither seem to notice him. He shrugs.
"Glasses always worked for Clark Kent."
Today, the two men who shadowed Nicholas the other night are joined by a third. They sit at a table by the door, inconspicuous and casually dressed, but alert and watchful.
"Who told you? Did you figure it out yourself, or—"
His finger flicks to the spot where Ellie did her celebratory jig yesterday morning.
"Was it the cherry bomb with an affinity for SpongeBob footwear?"
"My sister, Ellie. Yeah, she spilled the beans." I thought it would feel different, seeing him again, now that I know who he is. But it doesn't. Not really. Other than the sting of embarrassment for not recognizing him right off the bat, looking at him still stirs up the same feelings it did yesterday. Heated attraction. Magnetic fascination. Not because he's a prince, but because he's him. Gorgeous, sexy, captivating. Nicholas pays cash from a leather wallet, and I pass him his coffee. "You must think I'm completely clueless."
"Not at all."
"Am I supposed to curtsy or something?"
"Please don't."
And then the dimples make an appearance.
"Unless you have the urge to do it naked, then by all means curtsy away."
He's flirting with me. It's a sweet, sliding, teasing dance, and more fun than I can remember having in a long time. "You don't seem like a—" My voice lowers to a whisper. "Prince." Then he's whispering, too.
"That may be the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me."
He rests his arm on the counter, leaning in.
"Now that you know, have you reconsidered my invitation to dinner?"
I bet a guy like him, fucking royalty, is used to women falling at his feet, literally. And I'm not used to seduction or head games, but working here all these years, growing up in the city, there is one thing I know how to do when it comes to men. Play it cool. "Why?" I scoff. "Because you happen to own a country? Like that's supposed to impress me?"
"It impresses most people."
And the dance goes on. "Guess I'm not most people." His eyes sparkle and his lips grin.
"Apparently not."
He angles his head toward a table in the corner.
"Well then, I'll be over there, in case you'd like to join me."
"That's what you're going to do all morning? Stay here?"
"That's the plan, yes."
"Don't you have stuff to do? Important stuff?"
"Probably."
"Then why aren't you doing it?" He searches my face, those eyes falling to my mouth like he can't tear his eyes away.
I like looking at you.
Whoosh goes my stomach, and the whole world spins. Nicholas casually strolls over to his table, looking so very satisfied with himself. A few minutes later, behind the counter, Marty leans in close, his brown eyes wild.
Don't look now, but we've got a celebrity customer.
I start to turn, but he grabs me.
I said, don't look! That's Prince Nicholas over there, or my name isn't Martin McFly Ginsburg.
I think Marty's mom was kind of high when she named him, too. I lay calming hands on his shoulders. Yes, it's him. He came in the other night and yesterday morning. He squeals like a teenage girl who just got her driver's license.
How could you keep this from me?
I invoke Pulp Fiction. It's his favorite movie of all time, and hope it's powerful enough to keep Marty from freaking out. Bitch, be cool. Don't make a big deal out of it.
Bitch, be cool. You don't know what you're asking. That boy's picture hung on my wall for years. I always hoped he secretly played for my team.
I sneak a quick peek over my shoulder to see if Nicholas is watching. He is. He waves. Then I turn back to Marty. I think I can say for sure that he doesn't. He sighs.
That explains why his eyes are on your ass like a cat chasing a laser beam.
He shakes his head.
Story of my life. All the good ones are straight or married.
Chapter 6 Nicholas. There's a perverse sort of pleasure in watching Olivia Hammond move. Peep shows have never really been my bag, but at the moment I have a whole new appreciation for the concept. On the one hand, it's torturous, the teasing sway of her fine hips as she glides from table to table, the delectable offering of her arse when she bends over to pick up a dish, just waiting to be nipped and kneaded and worshipped. But there's a simmering enjoyment in it, too, in how her rosebud mouth slides into a welcoming smile, the sweet harmony of her voice, the feel of those exotic dark blue eyes as they drift back to me again and again. I make a show of opening the newspaper, to at least try and be polite. But for the majority of the time, I stare, openly. Hell. Rudely. My etiquette tutor is rolling in her grave. And yet, I just can't be bothered to give a damn. I want Olivia, in my bed, on my cock, over my face. And I want her to know it. You can also learn quite a bit about people by watching them. Olivia Hammond is hard working. It's there in the way she rubs her neck and arches her back. She's tired. But pushes on. Olivia is friendly, a characteristic that's clear when she approaches my security team and introduces herself. I chuckle when the lads give their names awkwardly, Logan, Tommy, and James. Because they're not accustomed to being the focus of attention, it runs contrary to their job description. But then Tommy gives her a wink, and my chuckle cuts off. Cheeky bastard. I'll have to keep an eye on him. Olivia is kind. That's obvious when she hands over the prescriptions she picked up for her neighbor, Mrs. McGillicutty, then quibbles when the elderly woman insists on reimbursing her. And Olivia is trusting. Too trusting. I note this when she has a disagreement with an unpleasant, well-dressed customer who seems to have placed an order for 50 pies for a party she's cancelling because of the weather. Though Olivia argues she's already put out the money for the ingredients, already made 30 of the 50 pies, the woman sneers that without a contract, that's Olivia's problem, not hers. Just after 2 o'clock, a customer walks in, who has a thick neck and HGH-infused arms that make his head look tiny. A pinhead, you could say. He's wearing black bike shorts, so ball-stranglingly tight, I adjust my own set in commiseration, and a ripped sleeveless shirt. He comes through the door like he's familiar with the place, with his arm over the shoulder of a bleached blonde, oompa-loompa-colored girl, smacking bubble gum with engorged lips. "Jack!" Olivia greets him. "Hey!"
"Liv,
How's it going?
Great.
She leans against the counter. He looks her up and down in a way that makes me want to jab his eyeballs out.
Man, it's been, like, 5 years. I didn't think you'd still be here.
Olivia's head bobs in a nod.
Yep, still here. What's up with you?
Things are awesome. I graduated from Illinois State last year and came back home to open up a gym in the neighborhood with my fiancé, Jade.
He turns to the woman clinging to his arm.
Jade, this is Liv.
Hey.
Hi, Olivia returns.
Wow. Good for you, Jack.
He holds out a stack of business cards to Olivia.
Yeah, I'm just passing these out to all the local businesses. Could you put them on the counter? Get the word out about the gym. We open in a few weeks.
Olivia takes the cards.
Sure, no problem.
Thanks. You're the best, Liv.
He starts to go, but then adds,
It's good to see you. I really thought you would have gotten out of here by now. But hey, guess some things never change, right?
What an obnoxious asshole. Olivia smiles tightly.
Guess not. Take it easy.
And he strolls back out the door. Olivia shakes her head, almost to herself. Then she comes up to my table, holding the coffee carafe.
Refill?
I slide my mug over.
Thank you, yes.
I lean back in my chair, tilting my head as she pours. So, Jack, ex-boyfriend. Her cheeks go slightly pink. I think it's an adorable reaction. My cock also goes rigid with approval.
Yeah, Jack and I dated in high school.
Well, if Jack's your only experience with dating, I understand now why you avoid it. He seems like a prat. I look up into her lovely face. You can do better.
Like you?
Absolutely. I point to the chair across from me.
Let's talk more about that.
The you doing me part. She laughs.
Okay, really? How do you get away with saying stuff like that?
I don't say things like that. Ever.
But you say them to me.
She moves closer, leaning toward me, and my heart pounds so loud I wonder if she hears it. Yes, I rather like saying all kinds of things to you. It's relaxed and easy, this newfound freedom I've allowed myself with her. The way I figure it, she's already seen me act like a tool. In for a penny, in for a pound. A dozen inappropriate, wonderfully dirty comments come to mind. But before I can whisper one, Olivia clears her throat and straightens back up. She glances at the empty chair across from me.
Where's Simon?
He had to head home on an urgent business matter. The jet took off early this morning.
What's his business?
I bring the mug to my lips, blowing softly, and I catch her staring at my mouth as I do. He owns Barristers.
Which location? The one in Wesco?
Olivia asks. All 37 of them.
Of course,
she laughs.
Silly me.
A bit later, I get up to take a piss. 4 cups of coffee in half a day will do that to you. On my way, I pass the waiter. Marty, I think Olivia called him. A bag of trash over his shoulder, walking toward the back door. He nods his head in a friendly way, and I smile back. Then, when the rear door closes behind him, a deafening shriek, like 1,000 hogs squealing in unison, resonates from the other side. It's a typical reaction, and yet odd every time. When I walk out of the lavatory, the first thing that registers is the charged demeanor of my security team. Logan's jaw is tight, Tommy's fists are clenched on the table, and James is already half on his feet, ready to spring. And it takes only a moment to understand why. The dining area is empty except for one man. A small, bug-eyed man wearing a cheap suit and heavy cologne, standing too close to Olivia in the rear corner, practically boxing her in.
That's not good enough, Miss Hammond. You can't just ignore our notices.
I understand that, but my father's the one you need to talk to, and he's not here right now.
He leans farther forward, and her back touches the wall.
I'm tired of being jerked around. You owe us a lot of money, and one way or another you're going to pay.
Olivia tries to slip past him, but he grabs her arm, squeezing hard. My composure snaps like a twig.
Get your hands off her!
My voice isn't loud. It doesn't need to be. There's a brutal authority to it, a side effect of being obeyed my entire life. He looks up. They both do. And he drops his hand from Olivia's arm as I approach. He opens his mouth to argue, but recognition makes the words pile up in his throat.
You're... It doesn't matter who I am,
I bite out.
Who the hell are you? I'm Stan Marksom of Wilford Collections. I've got this under...
Olivia starts, but I push on.
Well, Marksom, as the lady said, her father's not here, so I suggest you be on your way. Now.
He puffs his chest out, like some nasty little fish in the crosshairs of a very pissed-off shark.
My business is with the Hammonds. This isn't your concern.
He turns back to Olivia, but I move in front of her, cutting off his access.
I've just made it my concern.
As I said before, most people are fucking idiots, and this prick is a prime specimen.
Nicholas, you don't?
It's the first time she said my name, and I can't even enjoy it. Don't get to savor the sound on her lips or see the expression on her face. And all because of this pissant in front of me. It's infuriating. I snap my fingers.
Card! What?
I shift forward, making him step back. See how he likes it.
Business card!
He fishes one from his pocket. It's bent at the corner.
I'll pass this along to Mr. Hammond. You're done here. There's the door.
Use it, or I'll show you how. When he's gone, I turn around to ask Olivia if she's all right, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't expecting a little show of gratitude. Perhaps with her mouth, hopefully with her hands. And just maybe if she's really grateful, she'll bring some hip-grinding action into the equation. She gives me some mouth, all right.
Who the hell do you think you are?
Her hands are on her hips. Her cheeks are flushed, and she's livid. Cock stirringly stunning, but absolutely furious.
Do you want me to list my titles? That was none of your business. You can't just walk in here and take over like that.
I was helping you.
I didn't ask for your help, she rails.
I was handling it.
Handling it? Was that before or after he shoved you in the corner and grabbed your arm?
My eyes are drawn to her forearm, and the angry, scarlet dots that now mar it. Finger marks. They'll likely bruise.
Son of a bitch!
Gentle but insistent, I take her wrist and elbow, looking closer. I should have punched the bastard when I had the chance. Olivia pulls her arm away.
If he needed to be punched, I would have done it myself. I don't know what you think this is, but I don't need you riding in here on your white horse. I can take care of my business. I take care of myself. Just fine.
She pushes her hair back from her face and puffs out a breath.
Your good deed is done for the day, so why don't you just go?
And I choke.
Are you kicking me out?
There are women would give an ovary to keep me. Half of them have actually tried. And this one's tossing me to the curb.
Over nothing. What in the actual fuck?
Yeah, I guess I am.
I hold up my hands.
Fine, I'm gone.
But I'm not. Not just yet.
You're crazy.
My finger jams against my skull.
You've got a screw loose, love.
You might want to have someone take a look at that. She flips me off.
And you're a royal dick. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.